Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lasswolf. Joining me, as always, well, I guess not as always. are my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So, I get home from work, and there's three burly men waiting for me at my door, right? They follow me at my house, and they take all my Star Wars stuff out of my house, put it in a van, and drive away and leave me with a letter.
Damn, what did it say?
Well, George Lucas listens to our podcast, and he noticed that I made a comment on our Rogue One podcast where I made fun of the lava planet because I didn't understand it. But it turns out that's where Vader became Vader.
Right.
And he's there now with a big fort, so it's kind of weird. But I didn't know that on the podcast. So I have no more Star Wars paraphernalia in my home.
Well, they didn't mention in the movie that was specifically Mustafar, the planet where Vader
lost all his limbs because he didn't have the high ground.
And his skin.
Never underestimate the high ground.
You don't have the high ground. Even though Obi-Wan didn't have the high ground. He had low ground when he fought Darth Maul, but whatever.
He had
to jump up even higher than the ground at that point.
Dude, you're right. Yeah. I never considered that.
It makes no sense.
Right.
So are there more lava planets?
I mean, I would assume
if you dig deep enough, every planet's a lava planet. Right?
Man, that was that was deep, literally.
Yeah. Robert Lamb, say hi to everyone.
I'll do an intro kind of like Mark. This is actually has nothing to do with George Lucas, but how come all of the planets, and maybe not all of them, but a lot of them in the Star Wars universe, how come they all have to have one geographical, like, environmental kind of setting? Like, why is it the ice planet of Hoth, or like the lava planet of Mustafar, or
Tatooine,
which is desert, or Dagobah, which is a swamp planet? Why can't they have like a lot of environments like Earth?
Well, you don't know. You don't know if Tatooine had like a winter resort somewhere.
They call it the desert planet
somewhere.
They call. I doubt that. If they're skiing, they're skiing on sand dunes.
What about the?
You can ski.
What about Yavin, the planet the original Rebel base was on? That seemed like a very lush environment. I'm pretty sure there were
Which one was the forest moon of Endor?
That
was Yavin.
Forest moon.
It's a forest moon.
Oh.
I feel like all the
No, I'm talking about the first movie. What was the planet where the Rebel base was on?
Which first movie? That was
A New Hope.
That was that one.
Yeah.
Dantooine?
No.
No,
doesn't she lie to Mothma and go, Dantooine?
Yeah, it's on Dantooine. Dantooine's too far for to show our impact.
Yeah, I'm talking about A New Hope, where like the...
That was Yavin. That was the forest moon of Endor, right?
No, the forest moon of Endor was a different location, I think.
Is that the one where Chewie doesn't get a medal?
Yeah.
I don't remember what Yavin was then. It probably had something.
Yeah, that seemed like a very nice...
I don't know. I want to see a geographical map of what it looks like. I want to see see the desert.
Why is the Death Star? And why is it all just like...
Why is the Death Star all mechanical?
Yeah.
That sounds like a Jerry Seinfeld bit. What's the deal with the Death Star?
What about the Starkiller base? It's all snow and shit.
Yeah. Why is there a port that's a huge weakness?
That's true. Well, now we know. Rogue One.
Alderaan was the planet, but now it was the only one in the galaxy with multiple regions, and it's gone.
Yeah. Ah, shit. Yeah. Well, too bad. Now we're just stuck with planets that have one environmental...
Thanks, Grand Moff Tarkin. Such a dick. You call him Grand Dick Tarkin.
Yeah. Take that, old Peter Cushing, who's dead.
Jerk face.
CGI his face again so we could just spit on him.
All right. I think now's a good time to start the podcast like we usually do, and that's with listener questions. Mark, I think you have a question for us this week.
Yeah. So I have a good buddy named Bryce. I lived in Korea back in 08. We were buddies back then, and occasionally he sends me a drunk message via Facebook. And I always know because it like hits me at like 2 a.m. his time.
Was that North Korea? Hey, Bryce,
what?
North Korea?
No. That was the year before when I escaped.
Shit, okay. And you escaped into South Korea.
Yeah, I escaped.
Good choice.
I mean, you don't want to do it the other way around.
Yeah, you don't want to go into Russia, right? Or wherever. Yeah.
Like, they welcomed me with open arms. Like, let me in! You know, it was a terrible year. But his question is, he actually wanted us to do an entire podcast about it, like rankings and breakdowns and everything. You know, it could lead to it, who knows. But the question is, what is Nick Cage's best wig? Best worst wig?
I think for me, it's got to be the one he had in Knowing. One in, were you going to say that?
No, I had another one, but that was my number two.
Oh, okay. Because, Knowing was the movie where he played, like, this psychic that just saw future events. And, like, I remember it was in the trailer as well, but there was, like, this one scene where, like, I think he dodges a bullet, but he does
That's next.
Oh, next.
Yeah,
next.
See, that's right. Mine. Yeah.
Okay, next, yeah. But there was a scene where he's like, he just he dodges this bullet or whatever in the most dramatic way, and like the hair, just like, it's like something out of like a Fabio like photo shoot where he just like, it just luxuriously just like follows him.
And was it just long? Like, I don't remember if it was like short.
It was like past his ears. You could like do the tuck behind the ears. You know what I mean?
Because wasn't it similar to how he looked in Left Behind?
I think it was kind of like, it's like a more suave version of what he had in Con Air.
Okay.
If you can picture that.
Suave. Yeah. I'll try. I know the one that I remember distinctly because I saw in the trailer and I just go like, what is up with this guy's hair? Was Sorcerer's Apprentice? Was it that one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or no, the one with the witch.
Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch.
It was very wavy.
Yeah.
It was like,
there's a lot of slow motion.
You have to put work in to make it that wavy.
But it's not like, it's not wavy in a good way though. Yeah. It's like, it almost looks like his hair was like almost like thinning in parts, but it was long. It was weird. It was like thin hair, but long. I don't know. That's what I remember of
like
it. Maybe
it
I'm
like
remembering
he got
it wrong.
Trapped in a dryer for 3 days.
It's kind of frizzy.
This is a weird Static story, cling. But I had a buddy one time. He was getting his hair put into, I went with him. He was getting his hair put in the cornrows, and my hair used to be pretty long. So someone started doing it to my hair, but it looked really bad. So I took the rose out, and my hair looked like Nick Cage's does in Season of the Witch. So maybe that's what they did to him.
That's pretty cool. Dude, you looked like Nick Cage in one of his most highly anticipated movies of 2011.
I could have been his stand-in. I think they filmed it in like 2009, then they released it years later. I like to think that they just forgot about it.
What was Nick Cage's last good movie? Kick-Ass?
No, Joe. He was really good in Joe.
I didn't see it. When did that come
out? David Gordon Green, 2 years ago. Very good movie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's still trying.
I know. That's nice of him. But I don't know. For me, it's been a while since I've like seen him in a movie and gone, okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to want to cast Nick Cage these days because I feel like if you're like a casting director, you're like, I feel like Nick Cage is like really talented enough to pull this role off, but he brings like a whole lot of other things with him. So it's just like,
I mean, he's got that curse though, right? Like the Oscar curse, kind of like Halle Berry and Cuba Gooding Jr., where they're just not in like movies, like that great of movies anymore. I mean, I guess Nick Cage is doing a lot more than what I've seen of Cuba Gooding Jr. besides O.J. Simpson, that miniseries.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I mean, he's making a lot of movies, Nick Cage.
Yeah, I know he does. He makes a ton.
Dinosaur fossils don't pay for themselves. Like, I used to watch them. There's a movie called Stolen. Just, all right, so if you're listening to the podcast, type in Josh Lucas Stolen, and his hair wins everything because it looks like a rat died on his head.
Nice.
So I'm going with Josh Lucas's wig in the movie Stolen that Nick Cage is in.
Okay.
That's my answer.
Nice.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. So what, for his next movie, Like, what's the length of his next of?
I think he should go bald now.
Bald?
I want to see what he's like bald. Like,
yeah,
a
go
Bruce
Willis.
List. Yeah, see what it's like.
Has he gone bald?
Or do National Treasure 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just go have his hair go all the way down to his ankles.
Whoa.
Like a cousin, it
like Rapunzel, like go down, go even further.
Oh man,
Rapunzel with Nick Cage.
Yeah, it turns into an action movie. He actually doesn't need help and shit. And he uses his hair as like a whip to grab onto shit.
He like skis on it.
Yeah, his hair just turns into like Inspector Gadget kind of shit, and he can just do whatever he wants with it.
He's swinging from trees like Shia LaBeouf.
It turns into
a
like,
movie we don't speak of.
Yeah. Turns into a helicopter so he can fly around.
Did I ever tell you guys my idea of like an R-rated like Taken Rapunzel? I see it as like a mash of like Die Hard and Cliffhanger. Or like the action hero, someone like Bruce Willis has to like climb this tower to save the girl. But he has to climb a tower with the girl's hair, but along the way he has to fight like evil terrorists and ninjas and
all the way up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's Hall Castle.
Yeah, the whole time, like the girl is just trying to hold on for dear life. It's like, why are you taking so long?
Just the whole time. It'd be like,
I gotta take down this dictator.
Be right there.
Yeah.
And then like the dictator's son is like, just cut her hair.
No.
It's like, no. He's hanging on by like one strand.
Just cut it. I have a scissors.
No.
I have to fight him in a duel.
Like, you know, at the end when like the bad guy always meets the good guy one-on-one, I'd be like, I'm getting everybody I can. And we're just going to, you know, rush him.
I always like how like the main bad guy always makes it to the very end to fight the hero. I always think it's like, It's got to be tough to do that sometimes because all your henchmen are dying around you like crazy.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because like the henchman's job is to die before you,
right?
So,
but sometimes like the main bad guy will be there with his henchmen and like they all somehow get the boot, like they're just dead, and then he makes
it
through.
Well, the bad guy didn't do a good job of delegating. That's all I have to say.
Well, I just finished.
He's not a people manager.
No, but I just finished watching like Daredevil season one, and you know, like Kingpin is like with all these other guys that are just like masterful, like shooting everybody, shooting all the cops and stuff like that. And like they all end up dying, but Kingpin still like just remains unscathed. Granted, he was like in the truck and like tipped over and everything, but then it's just a one-on-one versus Daredevil. Works out perfectly for.
Yeah, but think of how many people. Think of how many of his men died like throughout the course of the season. So
that's true.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're all, yeah.
I don't see a point in being a crime lord in a world with superheroes.
Yeah, it's a
it's not worth it.
Yeah, I just don't. I feel like you're not getting too many returns there. Right.
I don't understand the idea of wanting to be a henchman. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
You get shot by your boss.
Yeah, you don't know who to trust. You know how many James Bond henchmen get killed by their boss before even James Bond shows up?
Yeah.
They fuck up something, and then they all of a sudden they have to die.
Yeah, Robert, we actually did a podcast on FF.
We should.
No, let's did one.
Let's do
James Bond. We did one.
What are you talking about? Let's do one.
No, we already did one.
Let's do Henchman Part 2.
Henchman Part 2.
Yeah, we did the podcast on advice for henchmen.
That's what we should do.
That's
I think
what
it's
we
like
already did.
47.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Look it up.
All right. I think that's the answer to that question.
Sweet.
Listen to the MFF pod henchman advice. So. All right. Thank you for that wonderful listener question. We hope you enjoyed that episode when you're listening to it. All right. Mark, what's the topic for this week?
You know, so for me, I'm a big underdog guy, and I think sometimes that hating on something is too easy. I think it's too easy to join the general populace in disliking something that is easily disliked. So for me, I like to find movie scenes that everyone hates, and I want to defend them. Like, not like in a like smug, you know, I don't believe in what I'm saying, I'm just doing it to be controversial. This is like me earnestly trying to defend movie scenes that everybody hates.
Right. Okay.
Right. You know, like there's so many scenes that people just they get on the bandwagon and then they just hate on them.
Right.
Like, so let's find some positives to some bad, maybe great movie scenes.
Oh, I'm sure they're all pretty great.
So we're talking about how bad these scenes are. Like, a lot of people credit or blame these scenes for ruining like an otherwise great movie. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's like, yeah, I think some scenes do. Actually, in the case of a couple of the things we're going to talk about, people say if this scene wasn't in this movie, it would be perfect, which is Psycho. Some people say this movie looks great, but the crew was a bunch of dum-dums and they did really stupid shit. Some people say, you know, you wrecked the Peter Parker character with this 2-minute scene. So, yeah, I think some of these scenes become gifts that make fun of the movie, and then that wrecks the film's credibility.
Right. So we're going to go through each scene and just kind of defend it, right?
Yeah. And all right. So, you know, I guess I want to start with, let's see, what do I want to do? I think this is probably the biggest misunderstanding of everything, and that is in The Fellowship of the Ring, where Boromir says, pardon me if I don't, one does not simply walk into Mordor. Mm-hmm. All right? They are 1,350 miles away, and they're walking there through caves, tunnels, boats, wars, armies, spiders, orcs, goblins, cave trolls, fighting mountains, you know, that eye that can see, like they're going on rafts, they're going in canoes. Like when people do get into Mordor, they have to dress up like as little Mordorian goblins.
Oh yeah, you can't just show up and just start waving to people.
Like you can't, yeah, like there's no like, you know, like me and you, the three of us are just kind of chill, we're sauntering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Mordor is up on the horizon. We don't just kind of like walk into it like, you know, John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. Like, you know, this can be some dipping, ducking, diving, dodging, and dipping. Mm. It's not a simple walk. So when Boromir said one does not simply walk, like you can walk onto an airplane, but you have to get to the airport. You have to check your bags. You have to go through security. You have to get to the gate. You have to get scanned. You don't just simply walk onto an airplane. Yes, you walk into Mordor, but it's not a simple, there's nothing simple about it. So now everyone sort of makes fun of poor Boromir for stating the obvious.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that. But I mean, like you said, they went through a lot of shit to get there.
They were different
just
people.
Like, they didn't walk through, like, you know, there wasn't a sidewalk that just went in there.
Sure, yeah, just took an Uber.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't take an Uber.
Yeah.
I mean, Boromir died.
Yeah, see?
like so it just annoys me, like everyone like likes to make fun of this comment, right?
Well, the thing is, like, I personally never had any problem with that scene or specifically that line from Boromir. I think what it was that it became like somehow it just became like this huge meme on the internet. Like, mm-hmm. I think that just kind of retroactively like made it a bad scene in a lot of people's minds, even though it just never really, I don't think a lot of people didn't really think it was bad. It was just like people always think of that meme, like of that Boromir picture, and him just like, one does not simply
do whatever. Yeah.
One does not simply eat one potato chip, or like
Or one does not simply wish one a happy birthday.
Yeah,
this is not a bad scene. I guess I should preface what I'm saying. I guess I'm defending much maligned scenes or made fun of scenes in movies.
I remember watching that, like watching that in theaters, and like that whole scene was intense because like you have like all these people sitting around and like they were discussing what to do with the ring, and like, you know, on paper it just sounds very boring, but like the way it was acted, like all the characters had this sense of urgency, like, and you had like this ring in the middle and they all knew how powerful it was. It was just like, it really did set up not only that movie, but basically the whole trilogy. So no, it was definitely not a bad scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I guess I'm just defending it because it's just become such a huge meme.
Yeah. I think, you know, people think of that scene, they immediately think of the meme, and that's, it kind of does a disservice to the movie, but at the same time, it's like it's provided thousands of jokes, so I guess it kind of washed
it
off.
So it's worth it. That's how you're defending that movie scene, is because it became a meme.
Yeah, no.
Why not?
Yeah. No, I am.
Yeah.
Because I think people have lost focus on what the scene meant.
Yeah,
or they're like, oh, yeah, they walked into Mordor. Yeah, but it wasn't simple.
No. Right. That's the whole thing. I think that's like the best way to describe it. Like the best way to defend it is, it wasn't just like a walk into it. Like, it took 3 movies and 9 hours to do so.
Sure.
And it's one of the rare movies that did one movie for one book.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing if you think back at it. Like, he took three books, made three movies.
That's true.
I mean, even Harry Potter kind of strayed from that towards the end because they made two movies for the last book.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I'm watching them right now. I'm actually going through them again. And that seventh one, the Deathly Hallows Part 1, it's pretty killer, though. I like it. I'm kind of happy they split it up.
Didn't they split a couple of, like, last book? They did The Hunger Games. They split that last book into two.
And they tried to do that with Divergent, but it tanked so bad they're making, like, a direct TV sequel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That sucks for them.
Yeah, I think, that's all I'm going to get around the moment.
Tokyo Drift and Fast and Furious were split.
Mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey.
Wait, was that split? Four,
no, I don't know. Oh, okay. They haven't even come out with the second one yet.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sure they'll split it up.
They filmed them back to back because the haters, the actors didn't like it so much that they were like, let's just get it done.
Did they really?
Yeah, so they filmed the two back to back.
Let's just power through this. Yeah,
let's
over just with.
Let's film the rest of these sex scenes and be done with it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I don't know. I just see the meme, and then I like, and then there's people out there like, you know, Kevin Smith on Clerks 2. I know that they were trying to wind him up, but when Randall from, I guess, Randall was talking about all they did was walk. Like, that's so far from the truth.
Right. They ran.
Like, they sprinted. They hid.
They crawled.
Like, they climbed up steps. Some of them flew down steps.
Some of them flew. That's actually a harder scene to defend, I think, is when the Eagles show up and take them right out.
Yeah. It's like, wait, where were you?
Yeah, Jesus Christ, Gandalf, just send your Eagles right away. We drop that shit in the volcano and take off.
Yeah, he could have avoided so much stuff.
Seriously, we could have flew over all of the danger.
Imagine no one had Gandalf, to die.
Yeah, you're Gandalf and you're like, oh shit, I forgot.
I had Eagles, damn it.
I should have called this Eagle Uber.
But even then, I think it would have been hard because...
I would have seen them, and they have those dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's easy. I think it's easy to poke fun at, but it makes sense.
I mean, it wasn't simple, guys.
No.
You know, I think it's actually like an honor to become a meme, because it's hard to do these days. If you're meme worthy, I guess that's like that's a clear distinction these days.
Trust me, I've been uploading pictures of myself with like a pipe in my mouth and just no one's taken to it. Yeah, it's just no one's taken to it. I wear a top hat, I wear a monocle. It's not working.
But you can't give yourself, you can't set up your own meme.
No, I'm trying. No. I'm trying to.
That's like trying to give yourself a nickname.
Yeah, I tried to do that.
Robert the Killer Lamb.
Yeah, it's not working. The Killer Lamb.
Stephen Merchant from The Office and the Ricky Gervais podcast tried to give himself a nickname when he was in middle school called Spud. Like, he tried to do it for like a month. Like, yeah, everyone's calling me Spud. But no one believed him. No one bought it.
Yeah. It's like, all right. It's hard to do. I'm not calling you Spud.
All right, so my next one is... this one's a little tougher to defend, but I get it. All right. So Prometheus has a lot of scenes that get a lot of flack. All right. I think the movie looks great. I think it raises some interesting questions because it gives you zero answers. However, there's a scene where the map maker who makes all the digital maps, the globes, he's on comms with the rest of the crew. The map maker gets lost on the alien spaceship. So this guy has an active comm. Like communications in his helmet. He knows the maps, but he gets lost. But I'm going to defend him, all right? Because, like, I don't know. There's two things that happen. Like, how many times have, like, Google stopped working and you've just lost it?
Yeah.
Like, people are so dependent on GPS now. Like, when you're driving and your maps go down, you don't even know how to drive anymore.
What do I do?
Plus, like, I remember having MapQuest back in the day, and when you printed out, like, a page of MapQuest, some reason, it would always have me do a U-turn at the end when I didn't have to. It would always make me do a U-turn. I'm like, can't I just take a left?
Nope.
It's like, no, you have to go down another street and then take a U-turn and then take a right into the parking lot.
Like, even when you see the parking lot and you're like, I should turn in here. Yeah, you're like, well, MapQuest tells me to.
It's like, but come on, MapQuest, Walmart's right there.
No.
But you just stick with it. So this guy, right? You know, like, he makes the map. He makes maps. Like, who knows? He doesn't know how to follow them.
Do you think the Google car or van or whatever it is that takes, like, all the pictures, do you think it ever gets lost?
I'm sure it does.
Depends on what
and
maps
it
uses.
And then it tries to play it off.
Their Google Maps is trying to use MapQuest.
It's very ironic.
God, we got to hurry up and update this shit because I'm lost.
But like, no, like, just when people's GPS goes down, I'm telling you, like,
oh, I yeah, work, definitely. You
know, like, I work conventions, right, for years and years and events, and people be standing right next to a bathroom, and they're like, hey, where's the bathroom?
Yeah.
Or like, hey, where's registration? And there's a sign pointing to registration. So this map maker, you know, whatever.
I got a question. I saw the movie one time in theaters, and I thought it looked amazing. And I love Ridley Scott as a director. I did not like the movie that much. I felt like it had a lot of flaws. But when the map maker gets lost, is he running from something, or is he just lost? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think they kind of like saw something and then took off.
Okay, so then my defense is going to be he was just panicked, and he just kind of got confused, and that's it. Because when you panic, you don't always make the best decisions, and maybe he just kind of got confused, and his heart rate was up, and he was just kind of, you know, foggy in the mind.
Maybe he was like doing like a GPS, like a map making system, where he's just like walking around.
Yeah, just like... I don't know. I mean, I don't remember the scene completely. I did see the movie, but I just don't remember that part. But I do remember people kind of poking fun at that scene, at him being lost, and for some reason, I thought he was running away from something.
And like, and how many times, right, have you seen him? I've known a lot of people who Google Maps will be like, oh, I have a quicker route that cuts it down by 7 minutes. And you're like, nah.
I don't trust it.
You're like, I don't think so, Google. Like, even though it has all the, you know, the radar and analytics, you're like, I know better.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You know, I'm gonna stick with what I know. I'm not going down that dirt road.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he is ignoring his own maps, going, you know, I know this is what my maps say, but you know, I just can't do it. And also, there's a scene in Prometheus where Charlize Theron, the ship's rolling towards her, and she runs in a straight line where all she had to do was run 20 feet to the right or left, and she would have been safe. But she chooses to run in a flat, straight line.
Yeah.
But I mean, how many of us have been? Have you ever had a large spaceship?
No, and
falling towards you.
I think that's how you defend a lot of movies. Is people say that all the time. They're like, "Why would you do this? Why would you do that?" But I really think if you're in a panicky situation, you're not thinking straight, and that happens a lot of times. Like in general, that happens in real life all the time, where people don't think straight and they do dumb things. And it's just because they're panicked. That's kind of.
Because, like, I'm not going to go into details because it might be a spoiler, but, like, there's this one movie or TV show from the past year where there's this one scene where, like, this kid had to run away from this guy shooting an arrow at him. And, like, you know, afterwards, I mean, he gets shot by the arrow because he runs the straight line. And afterwards, everyone's like, why didn't he zigzag? I'm like, you don't know what you're going to do in that situation. It's just like...
Yeah, you're just running. You're just running.
You're just
away.
Running as fast as you can.
Yeah.
You know?
People say that with alligators, too. Zigzag. I think if you see an alligator, you're just going to run.
No, I think you see that.
I'm not zigzagging. I'm going to run.
I listened to a Stuff You Should Know podcast, and they said something along the lines like, it doesn't really matter. The average person can run faster than an alligator, so it doesn't really make sense to zigzag. What? You might as well just run straight.
What if the alligator keeps running in a straight line while you're zigzagging?
That's true. I know. That's why. Yeah, I never understood that.
Yeah.
Just run in circles. Eventually, the alligator will get confused and give
the
up.
The alligator maybe, like, doubles back and is just waiting for you.
Yeah.
When
like, you know, like, I mean, imagine, like, it just... And then there's also the scene, though, that... It's the hardest to defend is where the guy, the zoologist, I don't know what he is.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
But he looks
about,
at like this evil looking, like if there's like a 6-inch panda, like I'm going to stick my face up to that 6-inch panda and be like, oh my gosh. But if there's like a snake looking alien, like that looks evil. I don't know, not evil, but
it
like
just
that looks
dangerous.
Yeah, like I'm not going to go like, oh, fuzzy, you know, get up close. Like,
there was a CinemaSins, and I think one of the things was in that same character talks about how they shouldn't touch something else, like the goo, like that black goo. But then, like, yeah, like 10 minutes later in the movie, he's touching a snake creature. And it's just like it really was contradicting for that character, especially because he is like a biologist or whatever. And he's like just touching a random animal that looks dangerous. Like, why? Why are you doing that? And then it like attacks him, obviously.
So why would he do that?
it looked like a cute snake.
Sure.
He wanted to be the first to touch a extraterrestrial snake.
I mean, I guess a lot of times you don't expect animals to spit acid at you, crawl in your suit, and murder you.
I guess. I think of it kind of like Kane looking at the eggs in the beginning of Alien. Like, for some reason, scientists, they always want to just, like, look really close at something that looks dangerous, especially in movies.
Oh, so these, you know what? These are cinematic scientists. Right. So that's what they always do.
Yeah, they always have to touch whatever's, like, right there. Even if it looks dangerous, they're like, I gotta get a closer look.
Oh, in Jurassic Park, The Lost World, Julianne Moore, she's like this photographer that has worked with lions. But she's always, like, she runs up to stegosauruses and, like, gets them all riled up. She takes a baby T-Rex back into this place where the T-Rexes can find him. She makes some boneheaded, like, dumb decisions. So I guess we're just charting it, like, chalking it up as just stupid movie people.
Yeah, I think that's just what they do. They just have to – it helps progress the story and give us some action.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm going to be really smart about this. Like, not many action movies or horror movies would do well.
Right. Yeah, like, guys, how about we stick together? We check each room one by one. Just we stick together as a group of five. We all have a weapon. And we check each room and just see if there's somebody in there.
Hey, screw you, man. And then I'm Jason's going out to like, the back by myself.
Yeah. Lazarus runs into the woods by himself. Yeah.
Hey, black people, can you guys separate and go different ways into the woods and let us know what you find?
And hot females, you go over there.
Yep. Did you guys do drugs or have sex recently? Yeah, you guys split up too and go into the woods.
Yeah.
Are you a security guard? You know, go looking around with your flashlight outside.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I like John Carpenter's The Thing, is throughout the movie, they actually have, when they realize that they're, like, in, like, real danger, they start, like, splitting up, but they split up into, like, groups of three or, like, groups of two to go figure out stuff. And I thought that was really cool until the very end when they decide all four of them to go split up and go different ways to set up dynamite. But other than that, the whole movie, they do stay together for the most part. Yeah. At least in groups of two or three. I thought that was cool.
That's your number six favorite film of all time.
Robert's top 10, number six, John Carpenter's The Thing.
There you go.
Yeah. That's the answer to that one.
Yep. How's your defense of that scene?
Yep. I like John Carpenter's The Thing. Next. Yeah. All right.
So the next one is a little different. It's from Love Actually. So there's a sign. There's a moment where... All right, so Keira Knightley gets married to – she gets married. Her husband's best friend films it. However, he just films her face the whole time because he's in love with her. She goes to this place to see the footage of the wedding. She sees that it's just like her, and she deals with it really well and leaves. And later on, there's a knock on her door. The dude shows up. Andrew Lincoln from Walking Dead shows up with these signs that he wrote, and he actually cut out pictures from magazines. Mm. And, like, a pretty large poster. So he spent some time doing crafty stuff on these signs. He tells her to lie to her husband. He plays carols, and he shows her signs about, hey, listen, I love you, but you're with my best friend. So I'll probably be dating a model next year, but I'll still, like you. And then she kisses him, and he's like, all right, enough. And so you go through BuzzFeed and a lot of articles now, and Empire, my favorite podcast, and they're talking about that this dude's just a straight-up sociopath, and it's, like, one of the creepiest things ever. However, sorry to let you guys – I've heard you want to talk like three times. So I keep hearing – my bad. So, but in this world of Love Actually, it's like kind of normal in this cinematic world that Richard Curtis, the director, has created.
Yeah, it's – I mean, because it's a romance – I think it's him trying to just be romantic. Maybe he's not going about it the right way, and it is kind of creepy. But, you know, he's that guy who's he's just so infatuated with her, so in love with her, that, like, you know, he's the guy who stalks her Facebook page and sees what she's up to and stuff. Like, that's that kind of guy.
He sees what movie she's at, and he goes and sits in the back of the theater.
Yeah, he's that guy who just pretends to bump in to her at, like, a restaurant that he knew she was at because she tagged herself in it, and he quickly drove over there to, like, run into her and then just to talk to her. Like, that guy.
But that's not creepy.
That's not creepy. It's it's not normal. It's just like,
but in this world, in the romantic world, comedy world,
it is. Yeah,
like, there's a lot of weird shit that happens. In like, in Overboard, Kurt Russell convinces Goldie Hawn that they're married.
Yeah,
like there's a lot of like people love these romantic comedies where some crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, I feel like romantic comedies, there's a lot of like just crazy ways that the characters get together. And it's not always like the right way, I would say, but yeah, exactly. It works.
Like, I love Serendipity in that movie, but she's like, okay, it's fate if this happens. Like, no, just hang out.
Yeah.
Or it could just be a coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are coincidences in romantic comedies.
I think the whole movie is a coincidence.
But I don't know. Like, people really think that this is the work of, like, a sociopath.
I would say so if he appeared later on and the Love Actually turned into, like, a thriller near the end. But since he kind of just walks away, I think he's okay. I think he's a sane dude. Yeah. He was just kind of, you know, he missed her. He wanted to just show her that he cared. And he left him alone.
Now, would you guys do something like this?
The what?
Would you guys do something like this?
No, usually I just show up at a girl's house and play with a boombox.
Hold it over your head.
Yeah.
In your eyes.
But usually I play the song Mother by Danzig, and for some reason it never gets the same reaction.
You need to do the Glenn Danzig look where you just go shirtless and get like the really long Nick Cage black hair and just.
See, I've been doing it wrong.
I play that song The Last Kiss, like the original cover of it before Pearl, the original song before Pearl Jam covered it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
People love that.
Yeah, that's a really good depressing song to play.
Yeah,
like what?
What? No, but I'm gonna die in a car accident.
I thought it was hilarious. Like in my mind, like I like to think of Love Actually as like the prequel to The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
where like he becomes so distraught, he moves to Georgia, changes his name, changes his accent. Then gets married, but then like gets into a coma or whatever, wakes up in the middle of a zombie apocalypse.
You know, maybe this isn't going to defend that scene, but maybe you're right, Mark. Maybe he is a creeper and the cops were coming after him and he had to move to Atlanta, Georgia and like kind of like disappear.
Yeah.
Get an accent, turn into this other character.
Yeah.
And just start his life all new because he's wanted by the popo.
And then the zombie apocalypse happens.
And then the zombie apocalypse happens, and he's just like, I miss Keira Knightley, but now I have this baby and Lori, and she slept with Shane, and oh, shit.
Oh, man.
I think that is plausible. Because at the end, he said enough, but, you know, a lot of people say that once you kind of do something the first time, like, there'll be a pattern to it. You can't just say enough.
Yeah.
Like, quit an addiction, you can't just say enough. Like, there's steps to it.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live Kate McKinnon?
Oh yeah, she made fun of that on SNL.
Yeah, just recently. Yeah, they made fun of that scene from Love Actually, where she was playing Hillary Clinton and she was trying to get electoral votes. So she shows up at one of the houses and like tries to convince them to vote for her instead of Donald Trump. It was pretty funny. She had like a ton of signs and like just going through them. She doesn't say anything. It's pretty cool.
I'm telling you, like, and those carolers sounded good. Like, if I was the husband, I'd be like, man, who were they?
Yeah, get them back over here. I want to hear them.
Yeah, but no, I don't know. I just think in this world of Love Actually, where like there's adultery, there's Laura Linney's weird abusive brother.
Yeah.
There's some weird subplots. There's this one dude moving to Wisconsin and meeting like four beautiful women in a bar and then going home with them. Like, it's just an alternate world from ours.
I feel like...
Well, it took place in England, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
that's a different world.
You know, I feel like there's so much you can. I feel like you can extrapolate enough to teach like a one semester course in college. This would be like the weird elective that you would take to. This would be like the one credit elective you would take to fill out your credit schedule. It's like, yeah, the world of Love Actually. We'll be watching it every week.
People would take that. Isn't there like 8? So 16 weeks, I would say there's about 16 subplots or characters worth studying each week.
Sure. You know what? I think watching it every week would be kind of rough. I would say like maybe watch like a couple of scenes every week, highlight them, have a discussion, and just have like one big paper due at the end.
I mean, you got government.
Sure.
You know, Hugh Grant, you could dance.
You know, I've taken like a lot of bullcrap film classes at college, so I know how it works.
And how many times can you watch Chinatown? Come on, you got to do something else.
Sure.
Love Actually.
Double Indemnity three times in college.
Really? Citizen Kane twice.
I love it,
twice.
But they kept showing it.
Yeah. I heard so much about Chinatown and Citizen Kane. I'm like, those are good movies, but there are other movies.
You know, I had like one of the coolest classes I took in college. It was like a BS class, you know, obviously. It was like Chinese action films, and all we did was just watch Chinese action films. It was awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah. All right. I think now's a good time to take a break. I'm going to go dig up that old syllabus of mine so I can show it to Robert.
All right. Can't wait to look. I got my highlighter ready.
Uh-huh. All right. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Kyle from Word of the Bay.
And Nick.
And we're here to talk to you about Word of the Bay.
Yeah, Word of the Bay.
Yeah.
What is Word of the Bay?
Well, God, it's a Tampa Bay sports podcast. What is Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay is the Tampa area. St. Pete, Tampa, Clearwater.
So we talk about sports and other things.
Which include Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Lightning, and Tampa Bay Rays.
And another bay, which is slipping my mind.
Oh, I don't even know what that bay is.
Hey, guys, what are you guys talking about?
Nothing.
Oh,
hey,
Jonathan. This is our third host, Jonathan.
Well, did I just walk in on something?
No, you're fine. But if you want to listen to Word of the Bay, go ahead and go to www.sharkdropper.com
and check us out. Yeah.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Robert still can't believe that the syllabus for that class was 22 pages.
I know. We took a break for a day.
Yeah.
We're back. It's another day now.
Yeah. So do you still think you can take that class? That you can still ace it?
No, but if I pass it with a C, I'll be happy. I aim for average.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I was always happy with Bs. It's like, hey, you keep the 3.0 average.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I was perfectly fine with it.
It's not bad. Yeah, A's are overrated, especially if you don't want to do work. So, and I don't, so I'll stick with my Bs and Cs.
Did you guys ever go any schools that did the B plus or B minus or A plus? How'd you guys feel about that? Because, like, I always had, like, mixed feelings about it.
Yo, just give me a B.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way, too.
But at the same time, it's like, if I got an A, or if I got an A minus instead of an A, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I didn't like it because you get a B plus and you're like, oh, shit, I was so close to an A. And then if you get a B minus, you're like, oh, man, I barely made it. Like, I almost had a C. I'd rather just give me a B so I know that I got a B.
Well, I guess it depends how good of a student you were.
Yeah,
I guess it depends on the subject. So
I always got A's, so I don't even know what a B looks like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I always get, like, one A. So instead of just a straight, like, 3.0, I'd have, like, a 3.2.
Perfect.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah. Hitting above average.
Aiming a little bit higher.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mark, I think you have another listener question for us.
Yeah, so this one's from Danny. And the question is, Harry Potter and Bruce Wayne sit down in front of the mirror of Ariste from Harry Potter. No question. This isn't a question, but it would be a nice moment.
Robert, do you know what the mirror is?
No. I've never watched a Harry Potter film. No, I watched the first Harry Potter film in Spanish class in ninth grade.
Okay. So the mirror that he's talking about.
Right.
It's a magical mirror in Harry Potter that when you stand in front of, it shows you your heart's true desire. So whenever Harry stood in front of the mirror, it would show his dead parents. Cue the heartstrings. Okay. So I guess the question is, if Bruce Wayne stood in front of the mirror, what would he see?
His dead parents?
I think that's the obvious answer. Yeah. But I think we can dig deeper here.
Okay.
I think it has to depend on which
pearls.
Yeah. I think it has to depend on which Bruce Wayne that we're talking about.
Okay.
I think there's a distinction between the Michael Keaton, the Val Kilmer, the George Clooney, and the
So then let's go through each Batman. I think the Adam West Batman would probably
let's do that one first.
He would see sharks.
Yeah, I think he would see either a shark, a giant bomb.
Really?
Or Robin.
He just sees Burt Ward.
Yeah, Burt Ward's just sitting there. Not even in his Robin costume. It's just Burt Ward.
A recliner. All right, what about Michael Keaton? Like, I feel like a Pantera music video or something.
No, it's TLC.
Oh, yeah. Hey, don't go chasing waterfalls.
Are you sure you're not quoting TLC there?
Could be Birdman. Maybe he sees Birdman.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what that means.
So Michael Keaton watches TLC or Birdman.
Yep. Yeah.
Val Kilmer watches Willow.
Or he's seeing in the mirror, he's seeing
himself. Like
the documentary to The Island of Dr. Moreau, whatever that was called.
Oh, I watched that. Yeah. Or himself chewing gum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Although yeah, I will say that Val Kilmer in his prime, like he was a...
I liked him. He was a good actor.
Oh, yeah.
Tombstone?
You were in love with him.
Tombstone, Ghost in the Darkness was like a guilty pleasure of mine.
Because of Val Kilmer?
Just because of him. I liked Michael Douglas, too, and I like Lion, so it had the perfect combo for me.
Wow. That's a very specific set of conditions there.
It's the only movie that matches all three criteria for me.
I was working a Comic-Con, and Val Kilmer was at one of them, and I like jumped behind him and took a picture real quick, and he looks really grumpy.
I think that's just how he always looks.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. And some guy was like, dude, I loved you in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You were hilarious. He goes, yeah, I was.
That's such a Val Kilmer thing to say, though.
Yeah. That dude's dry. I like it. I think George Clooney would see himself running away from becoming Batman.
I think he would see bat nipples.
Yeah, just
two bat nipples.
Cutting through the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Really? It wasn't like Julia Roberts.
No, he would see his career after Batman and it would be him happy.
Just sure. Him on a yacht.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if we were George Clooney, like, wouldn't you already have everything you want? I'm just, I don't know. I'm just throwing that.
Yeah, he just sees like a 20-year-old girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I know he's part of some task force to find like corruption in Africa, like with the generals out there. He did this like multi-year, $20 million task force to find corruption. But like, oh. I wonder if it took $20 million for where he was at. Like what was never mind. Sorry. But he's like doing good work now. Good work.
Glenn. Sure. That's good. Sure. Good
what for about him. Christian Bale?
Christian Bale.
Eating a sandwich.
What does Christian Bale want?
Just screaming at himself?
Yeah, it would just be, you don't understand what it's like.
I feel like it's like movie set lights that aren't being messed with.
Yeah. Oh, come on, man. Get off the set.
Him just yelling at a DP?
Just walking by. You're a fucking joke, man.
Although, to be fair, like I've heard like, I guess like the guy was kind of being very distracting with the lights. Oh, I don't know.
Dude, like,
I don't know.
These guys, I'm telling you, these guys on sets, once they've been there for a long time, they don't give a shit anymore. Like, they know the importance of the take and they just don't care. So, like, he probably lost. Like, so I didn't have much sympathy because he probably just lost it on the dude. But I've seen so many people just kind of do that.
I've heard, though, Christian Bale has a temper, kind of like Russell Crowe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he sees, like, Peter Griffin on the other side. Oh.
I want to see them throw cell phones at each other.
That would be pretty cool. I would watch that movie.
And I think Ben Affleck would just be him doing pull-ups.
Yeah. Ooh. Or Matt Damon.
I want to say Amy from Chasing Amy. I forgot what her name was.
Joy Lauren Adams?
Yeah.
That would just be very...
Or what if it's like that Dark World, that apocalyptic... He just sees a bunch of those insect things flying around.
Ooh.
That'd be cool.
Or being the bomb in Phantoms.
Or it's just his depressed look when he got interviewed and they were talking to him, and he just realizes that he's in part of like another shitty superhero movie, and he looks so depressed.
Can I just say how awesome like this concept of this mashup is of like all the Bruce Waynes are like in the... Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Looking at the magical mirror. It's like, how did they end up there? That's the story I want to see.
Yeah, what if it's just every Batman that looks into it just sees the other Batman?
Oh, man.
And they're all just waving to him.
Sure.
Giving him a thumbs up.
Like, if I looked into a mirror and someone was just waving at me happily and giving me thumbs up, I'd be happy.
I'd be scared, but I guess happy too.
Yeah.
That'd be creepy. Somebody's just waving at you.
Yeah, but earnestly, not like creepily.
Not like far away, like they're standing in the woods kind of waving at you.
Yeah, not like peeking behind a tree. Like they're just like, hey, man, you look great.
Not like clowns in South Carolina kind of creepy.
Yeah, they're not like one finger telling you to come closer. Like, yeah. There's like a nice earnest wave. Like, hey.
Try to attract you with a balloon.
What's
they
going
give
on?
You the double thumbs, the yeah. double thumbs up.
Keep it up.
Single.
Keep it up.
Sure, sure. So is that the answer? The two thumbs up?
Two thumbs up.
Yeah.
Roger double, and Ebert. two thumbs up. Great question.
Yeah, no, wait. Ebert and Siskel just pointing at you with thumbs up. Like,
yeah.
They give you the point, and then they give you the two thumbs up.
Okay. Honestly, if I were standing in front of the mirror, I think that's what I would say.
So the answer,
Siskel and Ebert, give me a thumbs
so
up.
So that's the answer, is looking in a mirror and seeing two thumbs up from Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Oh,
that's amazing.
Or Ebert and Rober.
I would love to see that, actually. Mm-hmm. If I saw it out in the mirror, I'd be like, oh, that is so awesome.
And you know what? I think even the Batman would love to see that.
Especially George Clooney.
And probably Ben Affleck.
And they're totally different guys, you know, Siskel and Ebert were. So, like, when if they both give you two thumbs up, that means you're doing something right.
That's true.
Can we do a podcast in a future episode where we rank all the different Bruce Waynes?
I'm in.
I'll do it.
Sure.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you for that wonderful listener question. Mark, I think there are some more bad scenes to defend.
Okay, so the rave scene in The Matrix 2.
Well, you just jump right into it, right?
Yeah, no intro. Just jump into it. Honestly, I don't remember this. I only saw The Matrix 2
You said The Matrix 2?
Yeah, wasn't it Revolutions?
No, that was the third one. Wasn't there
a rave scene in the first one? Or am I...
No, the second one.
Maybe
second?
I don't remember. They all kind of blend together for me. Except for the first
Reloaded.
One. Reloaded and Revolutions blend together for me. I know Reloaded had the car chase at the end, or that whole highway fight scene.
Yeah.
And then Revolutions had more... Yeah.
And then Revelations ended with, like, a stupid fight.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't care about either Reloaded or Revolutions. So I was kind of lost, and I'm like, oh, but the action scenes, they're cool. And sure. Then I kind of never watched them again.
Yeah.
You know what I was just thinking about? Like, at the end of The Matrix, they were pretty loaded.
Yeah, were they?
So, like, they don't have to reload anything.
That's true. Second,
like, they had the upper hand.
What were they reloading?
Yeah, like...
The guns? Were they reloading the guns?
If
or
they were in The
Wait,
Matrix,
no, it's like...
It's
a
like...
computer system. Don't you load? Oh, shit. Did we just figure that out?
Is that what it is? What was the revolution? Just them...
You know, when
winning
a hard drive spins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, was it Revelation?
Yeah.
Was it Revelation?
No, it was Revolution.
It was Revolution?
Yeah.
So the turning of a CD.
Yeah.
Every time the disc spun, that was a revolution.
So does that make...
The Matrix...
It makes the first one moot, because then they're like, oh, we're reloaded.
Well, The Matrix revelation was that the last two sucked. That was my revelation.
All right, so there's a scene, right, in the second Matrix where, you know, Morpheus is like, listen, guys, some shit's coming,
mm-hmm.
right? We got these squiggies. They look like octopuses. We're the only free folk on the planet. We're in the center of the Earth. We're close to Vader's fort. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of lava down here.
Yeah.
We're going to die, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we don't have any TV. You know, we're all good looking. You know, we're all kind of grimy, dirty. We got nothing better to do. We have no, you know, once again, we don't have a radio. So let's just rave. Let's be human. Let's party. Yeah. Let's have a massive thousands of people orgy.
I mean, it makes sense because that's what you do. That's honestly, I think that most movies that are apocalyptic don't have enough raves in them.
Sure.
I think you could kind of just relax a little bit if like aliens were invading or monsters or something like that. And you just had like a good rave. I think that's what Pacific Rim and Independence Day Resurgence were missing.
Like, you can't do it every night because that would be exhausting.
No, but once a week. I mean, you're going to die eventually.
Once a week?
I think once a week. Every Friday.
Oof.
Because you still have weekends during the apocalypse.
About, like,
the
was this
the 90s?
What about the third Friday of every month?
I mean,
like,
I guess,
a
but
week,
you're... That's
a
like,
week wouldn't give me enough time to recuperate.
Of course it will. It's the apocalypse. I mean, things are going down. You got shit to worry about the rest of the week. You should have one day where you can kind of just let loose. There's no need to fight for survival 7 days a week.
And let me tell you, whoever organizes this rave was doing something great because everybody danced incredibly. Like, everyone was super into it. Have you ever been to a dance party where everyone's really into it? Like, there was nobody who was self-conscious.
No. How do you organize a rave like that, though? Like, do you send out letters or?
Well, like, I think he surprised everyone. Or was he like, hey, come hear my speech, rave afterwards?
Yeah.
Like, is it like going to like, you know, like, you know, maybe Hillary Clinton, if she would have been like, hey, come to my speech and we'll have a rave afterwards.
Then she probably would have won.
So, I mean, so basically, hey, I'm going to make this speech and we're all going to dance and like rub on each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it makes sense. But if you like compare it to the Cold Steel, the robots, you know, they're robots and they got a bunch of humans just raving.
Yeah. That's still raving.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, sorry. You said Raven, so that's just what popped into my head.
So speaking of Harry Potter, when like Voldemort's soul breaks up in the Seven, like I feel like I just lost a part of soul from a bad joke.
I honestly, that would be like, I'd feel hurt by that comment, except that I've never seen Harry Potter, so I'm just gonna assume that that was a compliment.
It was.
Thank you.
Whenever,
it wasn't.
Whenever here,
it wasn't.
Thank you.
It wasn't.
Okay.
But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, whatever. Like, I don't understand the rave. Why they? I mean, maybe they had to waste time because the whole second movie's. So look at this. The whole second movie's basically moot anyway. So why not add a moot dance scene?
Well, I think of it also as like we're not living in the Matrix. Like we're not in that environment.
How do you know that?
I meant we're not aware of it.
Okay.
So we're not in that environment. Who's to say that you wouldn't rave if like they just announced like, hey, we're gonna do this thing? I mean, you know, it's hard to say what you would do in that situation. I know if Lawrence Fishburne was like, it's time to rave, and everyone just starts jumping around, you know, I'm gonna follow suit. I'm a sheep in that situation.
You know, I'd be the guy. I'd be like, you know, I don't know. I gotta wash like this one shirt app.
You're gonna go sit in the corner.
Yeah,
I'm
gonna go reread like this half a book I found for like the 30th time. So, thanks for the invite, though. Just raving's not my thing.
I would just hope that by like my lack of self consciousness about my bad dancing, that people would be like, this guy doesn't care, so we don't care about his bad dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. It's the end of the world. You got squibbies coming at you.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
But people really, they're like, what is the scene? And I read this really long-winded explanation from this guy about how we're human and, you know, we're dirty and we're gross and, the you know, like we're the last thing of humanity and that's why we're doing it. So, I guess maybe that's what the directors wanted.
Yeah.
Or they just wanted to film a rave.
I think it was the second reason.
You know, maybe the directors were like, hey, these extras we have are really good looking.
Mm-hmm.
Rave scene.
Sure.
Or the Wachowski siblings just didn't know what they were doing with the second and third Matrix, and they just wanted to cram as much
rave scenes as possible.
Yeah, just different kind of scenes as they could. They're like, you know what would be cool? A highway fight scene. You know what else would be cool? If Neo fought like 50 Agent Smiths,
that was cool.
A rave. I know, but I'm just saying they took all these things to like all these things that would be cool, and then just somehow connected them into a movie that just did not, to me, work out. But you know, they took a bunch of cool things and put them together. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple cool moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the rave is okay.
Yeah. All right, so the next one is, this is a movie I defend, and I will defend this movie till the end of days, because I like movies, I'll get to it in a second, but I like movies that swing for the fences and miss.
Is this a baseball movie?
No.
Okay.
But, Bull Durham. No, wait, what's that Joe, Matt LeBlanc pitching movie with the monkey? Ed.
Yeah. No.
So M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, right?
Oh, God.
It is. Okay. I like this movie more than a lot of other movies, not because I think it's, I just think it's so different. Like when you watch as many movies as I do, like when something like this happens, it's really interesting because you're like, what happened? What were they doing? Like, why did the actors trust him so much? Like, why is this scene happening? I actually like The Happening because I feel like somebody was trying to do something.
I'm on the opposite side of that. I think I hated this movie. I didn't like The Happening at all. It was one of those movies where, like, I almost thought about walking out, and I haven't walked out of a movie since the remake of Black Christmas, so it's been a while. And I was like, I don't know, I couldn't get into it. I thought it was really corny. I thought the acting was so bad, and like, these were decent actors, but I just felt the acting was so bad and so forced. And it, like, really made me hate M. Night Shyamalan even more than I already did at that point.
I guess that puts me, like, right in the middle of you two, because I'm just kind of indifferent about the movie. I didn't love it, but I didn't really hate it as much as you did. I'm just kind of like, well, it's not his worst movie. I don't know. I felt like.
I think it's pretty close, though.
Yeah.
No, I think Another Earth and Last Airbender turn?
Last Airbender.
Yeah, those are worse. Because this is an original property, at least.
It's right.
But there's...
Yeah,
but there's a.
Oh, go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. There's this. The scene I'm talking about, though, is this old lady walks up to him, and they're staying in her house, and she goes, "Are you gonna kill me in my sleep? Like, are you gonna murder me?"
No.
And Mark Wahlberg goes, "What?" Yeah. No, he goes, "What? No." But you know what, though? The whole movie, he's this really earnest dude. Mark Wahlberg took this movie because somebody actually asked him to play a teacher in a movie. So he wanted this movie so he could play a teacher because he had never played a teacher before. And so he put all of his trust in M. Night Shyamalan and he made this dumb film. But you got to respect that everyone really committed to this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's I hated the way Mark Wahlberg talked in this movie. Like I hated the way he just – I just hated the way he acted. And, like, that whole, like, what? No. Like, he just had, like, it was, like, that dumb expression, like, all the time. Even when he was talking to, like, the train operator or whatever when the train, like, stopped moving. And it's just, like, oh, God. It made me cringe. And I hate – one of the biggest things that makes me cringe in, like, movies is, like, bad acting and bad dialogue. And I felt this movie had both. And when it just
we're defending this movie.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, that was the hard part. But – That scene to me wasn't like the downfall of the movie. Okay. I felt like it was way earlier. That part, I know what you're talking about. A lot of people didn't like that whole old lady scene, like when she's like smashing her head against stuff. Doesn't she like break into the window? Like she smashes
crazy.
In. Yeah. Like that whole scene, like it was interesting. And that actually was like the creepiest part of that movie to me.
Sure. I mean, he answered her question honestly. She goes, "Are you going to kill me?" And he's like, "What? No."
That's true. I mean, he was basically still being the guy that he was in the beginning. I mean, he didn't, like, change it up. That's who he was. That's how he acted throughout. So it's just he's just answering
her question.
Do
you think Wahlberg would have been better if Shyamalan told him, "Yeah, you're a teacher and you're from Boston"?
I think it would have been a little bit better.
But, like, I don't think this was his acting choice. I think they just did what Shyamalan wanted.
Right. I agree with that. Since we got to defend it, Yep. Sure.
I mean, like, these actors put their faith in this dude. Like, that's pretty ballsy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I don't know. Are you going to murder me? What? No.
What?
Like, that's...
No, of course not.
What?
Yeah,
why would
like,
he do that?
That makes sense. He answered her question, honestly.
Yeah. And she was going insane anyways, so he's just trying to defuse the situation, right? So he
he's staying chill about it. And, like, you know when people ask you something that just comes out of left field, you don't see it coming?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, maybe that. So it had some confusion to him, and that why the what no sounded kind of weird.
Yeah.
What? No. What?
It's like Andy Samberg.
No.
Andy Samberg talking to animals. Wahlberg talks to animals.
What?
What?
No.
Goat? What are you doing, goat?
What?
Say hello to your mother for me. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, that doesn't, I think that scene in general doesn't really deserve the nitpicking that it gets, because it doesn't, to me, it doesn't feel out of place with the rest of the movie. I feel like that's just his character throughout. And yeah, he's just answering the crazy lady's question because she's going crazy. And after that, she starts breaking windows with her head.
Sure. So you hate this movie, but this scene isn't the worst part of it.
It's not the reason why I hate the movie. The whole movie is why I hate the movie. But like in general,
I feel like I did my job on this and I like it.
A win's a win.
A win, yeah. What a,
from now on, you got to preface it. I hate this film. However, that one scene where Wahlberg's like, what? No.
Sure.
It's all right.
Yeah, that scene doesn't make or break the movie. The whole movie breaks the movie.
I'll take a, I'll take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day.
There you go.
All right, so the next one is... all right, so we'll go to Psycho. And Psycho is one of the greatest horror movies, slasher films of all time. I mean, it set the trends. It was made for cheap on our Hitchcock pod, which we recorded with John, Robert, and I. Yeah, so... he made it on the cheap. Hitchcock did. He really changed the game. He killed off the main character. But one of the biggest complaints about this film is at the end, when there is a lawyer, a judge, it's a doctor, and he just explains what happened to Norman Bates. And this scene is so hated that John Carpenter made Halloween because of it. Roger Ebert, which is wishes it was cut. Like, so many people hate. They dislike this scene because they feel like it keeps it from being something perfect. However, this was like, you know, 1960s. Like, this hadn't been done before. So Hitchcock laid the blueprint. And the scene, what I'm talking about is, so Norman Bates has been captured. He's in jail. And this guy talks about what happened to him. And everyone hates that scene.
Yeah, okay. This one's easier for me to defend. Because one, I get why people don't like it, because it kind of takes it away from like this, how this menacing guy, just like how he did things and like who he was as a character. It kind of explains it away. And like, because of that, maybe it takes away some of the scariness of who Norman Bates was. But I also think it explains like why he was that way, which is something that's not done in horror movies too often. And not only that, is the biggest defense for it is the fact that that was in the movie just like it was in the book. That scene was in the book, the Robert Bloch book. I think that's who wrote it. It was in that book. I read that book, and the movie was pretty close, like pretty much like page to, I mean, like, I think the book was only like 100-something pages, and like it adapted to the screen like really easily. It's almost verbatim the book. There's only a few differences that I noticed. And like, that part is in the book, and that's what Alfred Hitchcock was doing, was trying to keep it similar to the book, and I think it worked out.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, and I don't think he wrecked anything with it. And also, I think audiences needed a little hand-holding after the brutality. I mean, this is a movie. Disney wouldn't even work with Hitchcock after this film. This film was really reviled by a lot of branches of people. So I think this explanation... even, and it's in the book, I think it also helped audiences digest a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, like, so like the biggest reason why a lot of people made the complaint of like, well, we shouldn't explain like that thing at the end, is like, you know, there's like this common misconception that like, if you explain like the monster, like the mystique around the monster goes away. And I feel like that's not always true. You can kind of explain the monster, you know, in a way that doesn't make him lose its mystique. It's just very, very hard to do. I feel like Psycho is one of the few examples where it's like, yeah, you explained it, but the mystique around Norman Bates didn't really dissipate because of that, you know?
Yeah.
Can you think of like other like, you know, movie monster villains where like the explanation of where they came from totally ruined them, you know?
Jaws.
Yeah.
He came from the ocean.
Oh.
Yeah, when I found out he was from the ocean, it wasn't my favorite film anymore.
Sure.
I think Halloween, the remake, kind of sullied the name. Because everyone was excited for it. That's why it made so much money. Mm-hmm. And then it was just gross. And then they made the second one and it tanked.
Yeah.
Like, It's kind of a weird argument. This movie is 99.9% great, but if it had this 1% out, 1.1% out, it would be perfect. That's such a moot thing to argue for.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, and that's interesting that you said that about the book. A lot of people never even mentioned that.
Yeah, I always thought, because don't know. I remember I was reading like a lot of those horror books that like movies were based on back in the day, and Robert Bloch, and then the one by Ira Levine or whatever, whoever wrote Rosemary's Baby. I remember both that one and Psycho were both like books that are pretty short, and they were adapted for movies or adapted into movies, and the movies were pretty much the book verbatim. There's only a few minor differences, and I always thought that that was really cool that they like they really did take the book and went page by page and turned it into the movie. I mean, they didn't deviate that much.
So all you haters out there, it was in the book.
Yeah, bros.
Go read a book, bro.
Yeah, read a book and get off of Alfred Hitchcock's ass.
Yeah, all you bros are out there who hate the final shot of Psycho.
It's what starts every fight.
It's the bros, man.
It's what starts every fight at every rave.
Yeah. Well,
you dissed the ending of Psycho, bro?
They aren't allowed to talk about that in the Matrix Reloaded raves.
Nope.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes such a massive fist fight.
Sure.
Oh, all right. Man. So, last but not least, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 3.
Ooh.
Okay.
Which scene?
Sam Raimi did not want to make it. He wanted Sandman as a villain, but the studio was like, you have to add Venom. So he included this stupid goo that gets attached to Peter Parker, Tobey Maguire, the goofball incarnate. Peter Parker gets venomed. And he becomes a jerk. He doesn't become evil. He doesn't become a terrible human. He just becomes kind of like a dweeb, like a tough guy dweeb. And everybody hates the dancing in Spider-Man 3. However, it's played for laughs. Like, it wasn't meant to be serious. This is a guy who hit the tough guy version of Peter Parker. Like, Sam Raimi didn't want to go dark. The tough guy version of so go Spider-Man 3 dancing and you'll see this. But his version of tough guy is what you're seeing on screen. He thinks he's being awesome, but he's the biggest turd on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what Venom is. Like, it just makes you into like what you think is evil. So Spider-Man's just so good that his version of evil is just to be kind of a jerk.
Yeah, I would say like, for me, when I saw that, I remember watching the movie in theaters, and it was like one of the first movies I watched in IMAX, and that part did kind of take me out of the experience for a little bit. But to defend it, I will say that there are parts in Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2 that are, to me, equally as corny, and I think that's the comic booky aspect of it, kind of tying in those old Spider-Man comics, like the Amazing Spider-Man comics. And bringing them to life, where I remember like his I can't even think of her name. His grandma, his Aunt May.
Yeah,
like she gets thrown by Dr. Octopus, I think, in the second one, and she uses her umbrella to hang on to like a part of the building. And I remember like thinking like, well, this is kind of corny, but it also brought in like that comic booky atmosphere, and I thought that was kind of cool. It was kind of like bringing in like the Adam West Batmans into like, you know, not necessarily Nolan's Batmans, but maybe like Tim Burton's or something like that, like kind of tying them together. And I felt like there was that aspect to the Spider-Man universe, and that was just that dancing sequence. Like, that was just kind of like his corny kind of, you know, comic booky take on this third movie.
You know, I never thought of it that way before. Sam Raimi is the Spider-Man as Tim Burton was the Batman.
Yeah.
I guess we're still waiting for the Nolan to come
Nolan
on.
Trilogy of Spider-Man where it's darker.
It's like super gritty and dark.
Listen, I'm Spider-Man.
Tom Hardy plays Mary or what's her name?
Mary Jane.
Mary Jane.
Oh, jeez Louise. It was just Sam Raimi didn't want Venom. And he didn't want Peter turning evil because that wasn't the tone of this. So he just had him dance. I love the scenes of him dancing. It just, this is a movie that probably cost $200 million.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's adding Peter Parker, a goth emo Peter Parker shooting finger guns at people and doing disco.
Yeah.
Like, that's a massive movie that he added that in as like a F you to the studio.
Yeah.
It's like a punk move.
It's pretty. It, like, to me, I wasn't a big fan of Spider-Man 3, but that, again, wasn't the part of the movie that, like, ruined it for me.
Okay. I loved it. I just, it makes me happy that it was included in a movie.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like it's the continuation of the raindrops scene from Spider-Man 2.
Oh, yeah.
The raindrops keep falling in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love that scene.
Yeah. I feel like it was just a continuation of that. Like, okay, so Peter Parker's in a different place, so we'll get, like, a different type of song and montage. And
yeah, I felt like all the Spider-Mans had that kind of, to me, like, I call it, like, corny, but it's, to me, it's, sure, like, that comic book feel.
Yeah.
The old comic book feel, like the original.
You know, it's just that Spider-Man 2 had that perfect blend of corniness and action and kind of heartfelt earnestness that mm-hmm. it just balanced everything so well. I felt like Spider-Man 3, like, Sam Raimi really tried to recreate the magic from Spider-Man 2. It's just he couldn't really figure out how to do that with, like, having to deal with, like, Topher Grace's Venom.
Oh, well, I think you get the fact that there's also three villains in it. Yeah. And that was, to me, like, the downfall of Amazing Spider-Man 2 was then, again, having three villains. It was just, sure, too much.
It's just, man, if they can somehow just look at what happened in Spider-Man 2 and just dissect it and just try to base all future Spider-Man movies off of that, mm-hmm. I think that would be a step in the right direction.
Well, and X2 as well. Like, Stryker was the main bad guy. Yeah. Like, there's Magneto, but Stryker was the villain, major villain. He had Lady Deathstrike as, like, a sidekick, but just one villain to focus on.
Yeah.
Sure. Iron Man, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Like,
I will say Dark Knight had multiple villains. He had three, the Joker and Two-Face. Hey, get it? See what I did?
Oh. Well, that was good, actually. I like it. And you. Scarecrow made an appearance.
Yeah.
Four.
Okay. No, but I will say also that the Marvel films also do that kind of thing that the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans did, like the new, like, Marvel EU or whatever. Like, they all combine kind of this action with, like, a serious story, but also have their fun moments too. Like, Ant-Man has a lot of those fun kind of comic booky type moments.
It's more skewed towards that direction.
Right.
I feel like another
Marvel movies. I think so, too. But I think the Sam Raimi movies are kind of like that, too. Like, they can be serious at times, but they can be jokey and fun at times.
Yeah, I think so that dance scene in Spider-Man 3 is just kind of, it's just pure Raimi. Like, he's just, that's who he is. Like, he's the guy who puts that scene in in a 100 million plus movie.
I think it was the downfall to the Amazing Spider-Man films that they didn't have dancing, and that's why they had to sell their rights to Marvel for Spider-Man.
There should have been more dancing.
It should have been a musical.
Know, the director, Mark Webb, directed 500 Days of Summer, and in that film, there's a musical number to Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
There's no Hall & Oates in the new Spider-Man movies.
I've always said that the one thing Spider-Man movies were lacking were both Hall and Oates.
Sure.
Yeah. You can't do Hall.
Yeah, you're not going to go just Daryl Hall, and you're not going to go John Oates. You're going to go Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Yeah. So I think we've changed a lot of minds, guys.
I think so.
Sure.
I think people are out disco dancing right now after, like, they're dancing right now while listening to this podcast.
They're raving right now.
They're raving with their glow sticks.
Yeah. They have been clapping the entire time.
They're they're getting lost on their maps that don't really lead them anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Another successful movie Stones and Flakes podcast.
That's right.
I'd say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's that time of the podcast, but before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make?
Guys, head to Shark Dropper right now. So Shark Dropper, you know, we're part of Movies, Films, and Flicks. We're part of the Shark Dropper family. There's a podcast called Shark Dropper. Wonderfully random show. But if you listen to this podcast, there's an episode where I joined with Robert, John, and it's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's it's called Squid Lake. If you type in Shark Dropper, go to listen to Squid Lake.
It's a good episode.
And we basically talk about a movie that was never made.
It was oral history. Made. Yeah.
Yeah. Some cinema history.
Sure.
And it's a Florida classic, and it's called Squid Lake. And listen to all their other stuff, too, because it's great. But if you want to listen to one of the weirdest 90 minutes of your life,
it's a good 90 minutes though.
Like it's it's good. It's fun. It has a lot of personality.
Sure, definitely.
Like, it's listen to it and defend it.
Yeah, go check that out, Robert.
Yeah,
any plugs you want to make?
I mean, Mark already said go to Shark Dropper. I would say, I mean, we're still doing Patreon. So if you want to go to Patreon, you can search Shark Dropper Studios or go to sharkdropper.com and click on the Patreon link. It'll take you to our page. If you want to donate a dollar or more, you can. You'll get exclusive content. I think I said that word right. Exclusive content. And it definitely helps us out. And maybe we'll put a Squid Lake 2 episode for bonus sometime on there. And then don't forget to rate and review all the podcasts, movies, films, and flicks, all of the other Shark Dropper stuff. If you listen to it, 5-star review definitely helps us out.
Sure. Yeah. Movies, films, and flicks.com. Obviously, the namesake of this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I heard there's some good stuff on there.
The website.
Yeah.
By the time you listen to this, I have an article saying that Too Fast, Too Furious. I'm saying that February 2nd should be Too Fast, Too Furious Day.
Sure. Sure.
Too Fast. The best one of the whole.
It is. Movie. I'm serious.
I know you 2nd, just said you're serious. I know you said you're serious, but I'm still going to assume you're being sarcastic.
I am 100% serious. Earnest.
That Too Fast, Too Furious is your favorite. I'm not even a fan of the Fast and Furious movies, but there's no way that the second
one. No, it's honestly, it's his favorite one. You gotta, he's not joking.
Right. Read the article. February 2nd, Too Fast, Too Furious Day. Also, I should, this is good motivation. I should have a post up. I'm writing about 10. So you have your entire movie collection, right?
Yeah.
VHS, DVD, Blu-ray. You can pick 10 of them to show off. You can only showcase 10 of your movies.
Okay.
Which 10 would they be? So I'll have that post up well.
Nice. Great. Yeah. Exciting content all around coming down the pipeline for you to peruse and enjoy.
Squid Lake.
Yeah. All right. For my co-host, Mark Hoppar.
Squid Lake.
Robert Layam.
Squid Lake.
I've been your host, Squid Lake. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
Squid Lake.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.